This is continuing coverage in the trial of Alex Murdaugh from True Crime Today.
Welcome back to our continuing coverage of the Alex Murdaugh murder trial. We're now entering segment number two of coverage from the courtroom. Let's head there right now.
Before the jury comes in, I want to review a few of the rules of court and rules of procedure with counsel. First, Rule 20 of the Rules of Criminal Procedure provides that there shall be no argument on objections unless requested by the court. And that's Rule 18. No argument or objections unless requested by the court. There you go. Rule 18B. Then Rule 43H of the Rules of Civil Procedure, which is applied to the Rules of Criminal Procedure through Criminal Procedure Rule 37, I believe it is. 37, yes. And that is that only one counsel for each party shall examine or cross-examine a witness. And by extension to that, the court's order, and that's Rule 611 and the procedure established in the course of this state, the examining counsel only shall make objections. If Mr. Griffin is examining, going to cross-examine, Mr. Griffin makes objections. Likewise, with the state's attorney general, not any and everyone can jump up and object and argue. Any questions about either of those rules?
Your Honor, I understand the rule. So, as with the witness, they were attempting to get to testify about blood in the water yesterday, I objected. And it was a speaking objection. I apologize. But when I object, will you, and sometimes invite argument, or I'm trying to preserve objections in the record, and I'm just wondering, and since he doesn't get an appeal, that's not his concern, how would you like me to handle that?
Well, the objection speaks for itself. If the parties wish to place something on the record at some point in time after a witness after the examination is over, the court will give you that opportunity. But if we have speaking objections, if the one party makes an objection and proceeds to argue it through a speaking objection, I give equal time to opposing side. So we end up having a debate rather than that interrupts the trial and all of that. I certainly understand the defense's right to make a proper record, and we'll address that as is needed without there being a speaking objection.
For instance, they've listed hearsay, in my opinion, and I object. Should I say objection hearsay or just objection?
Yes, sir.
I can do that.
Yes, sir. The legal basis for the objection.
Okay.
Only.
Not a real advocacy.
Yes, sir.
I understand. Thank you.
All right. Let's bring the jury.
Thank you.
The jury is present.
Thank you. Cross-examination. Mr. Griffin.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Detective Cross, good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Jim Griffin.
Detective Rutland.
Jim?
Rutland.
Rutland, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
My name is Jim Griffin, and I represent Alec Murdoch.
Mm-hmm.
You had testified on direct examination a moment ago that that it was, you believe, somewhat unusual for Mr. Murdoch to go visit his mother as late as 9:06 on a Monday evening. You recall testifying?
I do.
And you were sitting in the car when he was being interviewed, and you recall him saying that his father, Mr. Randolph Murdoch, had just been put in the hospital that very day.
That's correct.
And that it was an unusual day because Mr. Randolph Murdoch was not with Ms. Libby Randolph, and she gets anxious when that occurs. You remember that?
I remember him saying something along those lines.
And in that context, it's, you don't criticize a son who goes to visit his mother, who has early onset dementia, on the very day in the afternoon that the father is admitted to the hospital. You're not here to criticize him for that, are you?
No, I didn't criticize. I just made a mental note that that was interesting.
Okay. And you... you walked the crime scene when you arrived, and you made some mental notes and observations that you subsequently recorded in a report, did you not?
I did.
And one of the things that you mentally noted and then subsequently reported was that there was a tremendous amount of blood spatter in the feed room area and around where Paul was murdered. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And there was brain matter and organic matter all about the place where Paul was murdered, correct?
That's correct.
And I think you even described that there was matter, that blood that went up to the ceiling and through the door and spatter everywhere, right?
That's correct.
And you also told the jury that Alec was clean, and you're referring to his shirt was clean, correct?
Correct.
His shorts were clean, correct?
Correct.
You remember the litany of Mr. Matters? Shorts, shirts, shoes were clean, correct?
That's correct.
He was clean, correct?
To my visual eye, he was clean, yes.
And to your visual eye, it did not look like he had just blown his son's head off in the confines of a feed room where splatter is everywhere. Isn't that correct?
I didn't say that.
Well, let me ask you, in your mind's eye, that night on June 7th, did he look like someone had just blown his son's head off, spatter going everywhere?
Again, I can't say that for sure. A lot of things would come into play to affect that. Distance is one of them.
Well, certainly if he appeared that way on the night of June the 7th, you, a sworn law enforcement officer, you would have initiated process to take him into custody, I suspect, wouldn't you?
No, that was not my role that evening. I was just assisting.
Well, one of the things you did that evening, Ms. Rutland, was you obtained a search warrant, did you not?
I did.
And that was your first official duty in connection with this double homicide investigation, right?
That's correct.
And I'm going to show you Exhibit 3, Your Honor. I shared it with Mr. Meadows during the break, and ask the witness to identify it. You recognize Exhibit 3?
I do. This is the search warrant I got that night.
Your Honor, we'd move Exhibit 3 into evidence this time, I believe, without objection.
No objection.
It's admitted.
I have it. So tell the jury, please, Exhibit 3 is... Well, first, let's just talk about a search warrant. What is a search warrant?
It grants us the right to search a certain item that may be potential evidence in a case.
And this search warrant was for what property?
4147 Moselle Road in Islington, County of Colleton, State of South Carolina.
And it covers the whole roughly 1,700 acres for the whole property, does it not?
That is correct.
And it covers the house, the residence where you went into the foyer, right?
Correct.
It covers all the outbuildings, correct?
Correct.
And it covers, and it gives you the right to seize any type of evidence, correct?
That is correct.
I'm going to see if I can get Mr. Elmo to work. Can you turn it on, please? I've got to turn sideways. All right. Let's see if we can read that document. Was there light in front of you? That's much better. And can we zoom in? All right. Okay. Got it. Thank you. So, and this is the search warrant, right?
Yes, it is.
And it says description of premises to be searched. And here it's 4147 Moselle Road, Islington. And then there's a PIN number. What's the PIN number?
That's a property identification number that's assigned to every parcels of real property within the county. It's set by the tax office.
It says the property to be searched are any residences, vehicles, outbuildings, kennels, or sheds, right?
That is correct. Okay.
And then it says the description of the property to search and to be seized. And that's under the description of property, right?
Correct.
And you prepared this document for the magistrate to sign?
I did.
And here says evidence that may be used or taken during the commission of a crime of homicide to include but not limited any item, tool, clothing, gloves, masks, hats, hoodies, shoes, boots, jewelry, firearms, ammunition, shell casings, gunshot residue, weapons, identification documents, any paperwork, etc. It says any evidence inside vehicles on the property, any evidence found in outbuildings or sheds, any tire, shoe impressions, any and all DNA to include but not limited to fingerprints, touch DNA, etc. Any drugs, narcotics, drugs, paraphernalia, any and all cellular phones, phone records to include incoming, outgoing calls, text messages, voice messages, etc. And it goes on to talk about photographs and whatnot. It's all-encompassing, isn't it?
It is.
And this is basically as broad as a search warrant that you draft because it's a homicide investigation, and it gives you carte blanche on the property of the crime scene, right?
That's correct.
And with the search warrant, you had the authority to go in the house and look for unclean, dirty clothes, did you not?
I wasn't in that capacity that evening. I was assisting.
Well, the search warrant provided that authority to law enforcement, did it not?
It would have, yes.
And you mentioned that you got into the law enforcement business because you're CSI TV junkie of sorts. Did I understand you say that?
Yeah, I was.
Okay, and you've seen CSI shows where they go and they look in the drains of showers or sinks and to see if blood residue had been recently flushed through there. That's possible, is it not?
It could be.
And that's just not on TV. I mean, that's skills that SLED's crime team has available to them, correct?
I don't know what they have available, but okay. That would be a crime scene unit question.
Right. And actually, there were the clean clothes that Alec Murdoch was wearing that night, they were seized, were they not?
Yes.
Okay, and the clean shoes were seized, correct?
Yes.
And the clean shirt was seized, was it not?
Yes, it was.
Okay. But that you were in the house when that happened, but you didn't collect the clothes, right?
I did not collect anything. I stood by in the foyer.
And who did the collection, do you recall?
Special Agent Owen.
And when was he assisted by anybody?
I was just standing by. They went to a back bedroom and I was in the foyer area. It was like an open floor plan.
And do you recall how do you recall what Mr. Owen, Detective Owen, Special Agent Owen, Special Agent Owen, did you observe what he collected the clothes in?
I did not.
Did he collect all the clothes and put them in one paper bag?
I don't recall.
Now, the jury heard the complete video audio of the interview with Alec Murdoch on the evening, early morning hours of June the 8th, and yet you were asked to repeat some of the things that he said, and the tape speaks for itself. I don't want anyone to misconstrue your testimony, so I just want to ask you, are you saying that Mr. Murdoch tried to turn his son over two times on that tape, or that on two occasions he described one incident that he tried to turn his son over?
The latter, that he explained twice, two different times.
So in answer to your question, if anyone would walk away thinking that Alec Murdoch told you that he tried to turn him over two times, that would just be mistaken, and we've now clarified it, right?
Correct.
Okay. Now, you never asked, or Special Agent Owen never asked Mr. Murdoch how he tried to turn his son over, correct? That's him.
Correct.
And so, you see Mr. Metters crawling around on the floor down here as trying to reenact something, but that night, he never was asked specifically, what did you do to try to turn your son over, correct?
That's correct. We did not ask that.
And that night, he was not asked specifically how the phone popped out of his pocket while you were trying to turn him over, correct?
Correct.
And that night, he was not asked specifically how far were you able to move Paul, if at all, when you tried to flip him over, correct?
Correct.
And in fact, did he really even say that I was trying to flip him over to check his pulse?
I'd have to check the transcript, but I believe he said something along those lines.
Well, did he tell you where he tried to check Paul's pulse?
He did not.
So we don't know from your interview, or Special Agent Owen's interview, how he tried to turn him over, how the phone popped out, or at least how Alec describes it, because he wasn't asked, and where on Paul's body he attempted to check his pulse, correct?
Correct.
And you were asked questions about whether there were knee prints and footprints by Paul's body, next to his body, right?
Yes, I was asked that.
And did you do such a forensic analysis investigation to see if there were boot prints or footprints around Paul's body?
I looked with my eyes.
Okay. And were you aware that before you got there? Well, what time did you get there?
Can I check my notes?
Sure.
Okay.
You can take this down. I'm through with Mr. Elmo. I think I'm through with him for now.
AM, I was on scene.
Okay, 12:22 AM. And Paul's body and Maggie's bodies were covered up with a sheet, but still present, correct?
Correct.
So when you were looking at Paul's body, just observing whether there are footprints near him, you couldn't see right next to his body because of the sheet, could you?
The sheet was mostly on his body, not on the cement on the ground next to the body.
Was it a fitted sheet?
No, but it wasn't a queen sheet either.
Okay. Then, jury has seen photos of the sheet. Were you aware that Captain Chapman and others went around Paul's body and lifted the sheet up to see if there was a gun underneath him?
Not at the time I was at the scene, no.
Well, I take it you did not observe their footprints anywhere in the area either then, right?
Not that I recall.
And you said that Alex's pants were clean. Remember saying that?
I remember saying that.
What color pants did he have on?
Khaki.
All right. And are you aware of any forensic testing that had been done to the pants to see whether there was blood on the pants?
That night?
Subsequently?
No, there was nothing done that night forensically.
That night nothing was done forensically?
Not before I interviewed him, no.
Right. And you just did not observe any blood on his pants or in his pocket?
No, just simply speaking with him like this, looking him up and down, I did not see any blood on him.
And he didn't look like someone who had just been within feet of blowing Paul's head off, right?
Again, I can't say that. There's so many different factors that you would have to take into account.
Now, you did a lot more, I believe, that night. After you left, well, let's go back. When you got to the scene, you partnered up with Agent Owen, correct?
That is correct.
And you saw inside the shed, and you observed there was wadding on the floor near his feet, Paul's feet.
Correct.
And when you say wadding, what are you talking about?
The internal components of a shotgun shell.
And then you saw in the rear window of the shed, there were several holes, right?
That is correct.
And you described in your report that you saw large amounts of blood spatter and brain skull matter were on the door to the shed and the items within the storage building. You saw all that, right?
That's correct.
And then you went and examined Maggie's body, did you not?
I wouldn't say examined. I would just say I looked at her.
And one of the things that you noticed when you were looking at Maggie's body, I believe you said you noticed there are a few clumps of her hair and a broken earring were located near a UTV tire, right?
That is correct.
And what's UTV tire?
I'm sorry?
What do you mean by UTV?
All-terrain vehicle, like a four-wheeler, side-by-side.
Okay. And you talked about these foot impressions that you observed, right?
I did.
And I said I was done with Mr. Elmo, but I'm not. Can we put these back up, please? Can you turn on Elmo? It's on. Oh, there it is. How do you zoom in, Doug? It's just change the color. Make it light. Okay. All right. I think that's good. Okay, hang on. May not be a good one. That's okay. Thanks. You mentioned that you told investigators that work for me and Mr. Harpootlian that the boot prints were not yours in these photos, right?
That is correct.
But now you told the jury that the boot prints are yours.
That's incorrect. Those are not my boot prints.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Whose boot prints are they?
I don't know.
Okay. That's why I get to do this. So,
objection to his comments.
Yes, let's pose questions.
So, you don't know whose boot prints those are?
No.
Okay. All right. Now, one thing about the search warrant that I asked you about earlier, it was, do you have it up there?
I couldn't remember if I gave it back to you or not.
I don't think you did. Okay. That's okay. It was never executed, was it?
I handed this off to SLED agents once I was at the scene. Thank you.
You said you handed the search warrant off to SLED agents.
I did.
Okay. But to your knowledge, was it ever executed?
Yes, it was.
Oh, you think it was executed?
It was.
And why do you say that?
Because the SLED crime scene unit, I was present while they were processing the scene and executing the search warrant.
And so there are two ways that law enforcement can get access to property. One is through a search warrant and one's by consent. Is that right?
That's correct.
Now, are you aware that Mr. Murdoch gave SLED, Colleton County, any law enforcement, FBI, carte blanche consent to search his property?
That wasn't relayed to me. I was tasked with getting a search warrant, so I did.
Okay, and once a search warrant is executed, a return is filed with the magistrate who issued it, right?
That's correct.
And you never filed a return on that search warrant, right?
Do you have, like I said, it was given to SLED, so. Okay.
So we'll find out more about that. But to your knowledge, I mean, you didn't file a return, that's all you can say, right?
I don't recall, I have to check my notes.
You heard on the tape, you heard Mr. Murdoch say, you can do anything, look for anything. Do you remember him just giving consent to whatever you need?
As far as speaking with him, yes, I remember him saying that.
Okay. And you walked back through the crime scene one last time before you cleared the area on the morning of the 8th, is that right?
You could say that. We were walking around the whole night and staying out of the way of the crime scene unit.
Were you there after the crime scene unit left?
No, I was not. They were still processing when I left.
Oh. Do you know whether or not the crime scene unit left shotgun pellets in the feed room?
I have no knowledge of any of that.
20, 30, even more shotgun pellets left behind in the feed room. Were you aware of that?
Objection sustained.
On Thursday, June 10th, three days. Thursday, June the 10th, you went with SLED, a number of SLED agents and law enforcement agents went to meet with Mr. Murdoch, Mr. Murdoch's brothers, Randy and John Marvin, Mr. Murdoch's son, and they all agreed to meet, and y'all found a location in outside of Varnville, I believe. You remember doing that?
I do. I remember doing that.
And that was during that, I believe you and a SLED agent interviewed Mr. Randy Murdoch, correct?
That's correct.
And Mr. Randy Murdoch agreed to allow the download of his cell phone, correct?
That's correct.
And gave consent, right?
He did.
And Mr. Alec Murdoch, to your knowledge, gave consent to download his cell phone, correct?
To my knowledge, yes.
And Mr. John Marvin Murdoch did the same, correct?
Correct.
And Mr. Buster Murdoch did the same, correct?
He did.
And everyone gave a voluntary interview that day, to your knowledge, right?
They did.
And then a little bit later, on the Wednesday, June 16th, you assisted SLED when they went out to the Moselle property and went diving, searching for, let me ask you, when you assisted SLED dive team, or did you assist SLED dive team on June 16th, 2021?
I did.
And with a search of the Moselle property, focusing on waterways, ponds, the Salcahatchie River access points for evidence from the crime, correct?
That's correct.
Were you looking for the firearms that were used to murder Maggie and Paul?
We were looking for anything that could have been linked to their murders.
And then you utilized ATVs and canvassed the entire 1,700 acres of land.
I did. That was my assignment that day.
And once again, that was done with consent by Mr. Murdoch, correct?
That is correct.
And then went back the next day and dove another pond on the property. You remember doing that?
I didn't dive, but I was standing by, yes.
You were there?
Yes.
And again, that was with consent, right?
Correct.
And then you were given consent, and you did a search of a white F-250 pickup that that Paul normally drove, right?
That is correct.
And while you were there, Mr. Davis shows up, and Mr. Davis, you understood to be the caretaker for the dogs, right?
Yes, that's what he explained his job title was at Moselle.
And that, did you observe him doing his work that day?
I did.
Did you watch him wash down the dog runs?
I don't remember that part.
But you were able to look at his tire marks and make an assessment as to whether they appeared to match the tire marks that were seen under the shed portion next to the old airplane hangar, right?
That's correct. He parks under the canopy next to the UTV.
And then on Friday, June the 18th, you had a meeting and you looked at some photos, I believe crime scene photos and autopsy photos at SLED, correct?
I did.
And you made a mental note and you put it in your record that you noticed a few strands of what appeared to be brown hair, unable to determine the length from the photo in Maggie's hands and fingers, right?
That is correct.
And you thought that possibly was an indication of a struggle, that Maggie had grabbed someone, had their hair in her hands, right?
I didn't say that in my report, no.
Well, so why did you note it in your report?
Because it was an observation.
Well, you also noticed in your report that there were some injuries, what appeared to be to Paul's face, that like he had been some type of struggle, right?
I noted what to me could have been scratches or a bruise on his cheek.
And we heard some testimony yesterday about a bolo on the lookout for a white pickup that Paul normally drives. That pickup was found the next morning, correct?
That's correct. It was broken down.
Yeah, and you learned through your investigation that Paul had switched vehicles with his uncle John Marvin, and John Marvin was rushing to Moselle when he got the phone call in Paul's truck, and it broke down the side of the road.
Yeah, that's correct. It was Mr. Randolph struggled to get in and out of the truck.
Did Collin County Sheriff's Office put out a statement to the press on the morning of June the 8th that there's no need to public to be alarmed?
I don't believe that came from our office. It did not come through CID for approval. I never seen that press release.
So was Alec Murdoch, your assisting sled, night of June the 7th, morning June the 8th, was Alec Murdoch a suspect?
That night, everybody was a suspect.
Everybody? Can you be more specific? Who else were suspects besides?
Well, there was reasons we were asking certain questions. Who his best friend is, who, you know, their routine each day. There were so many different scenarios it could have been that night. So, in my view, everybody was a suspect at that point.
Including Alec?
Including Alec.
Beg the court's indulgence to consult.
Yes,
the exhibit number that's in evidence before we play it. I know the green button.
Which one's green button?
Your Honor, we're going to play a portion of Exhibit 1. We need to cover our screens. It is a portion of Census Matter. Can you see that, Ms. Rutland?
I can, yes, sir.
Okay. Well, let's just stop right there. You see how far that sheet is on either side of Paul's body there?
At this point in time, yes, I see how it looks.
Is that how roughly how far it was across Paul's body when you got there?
No, because I could see the top of his head.
Well, I'm talking about the width of his body. Was it that far across?
I don't recall how it was, because I could see parts of his body, but it was still on him.
Okay. Will you go ahead and play that? Did you notice any footprints of the agent there inside the kennel?
No, I believe he's standing on the...
In the food room?
In the feed room?
Right.
No. Mm-hmm. But it was starting to rain.
Stop right there, please. Can you back it up just 5 seconds? Yeah, play it. Okay. As soon as it goes down, a little bit further. All right, please stop. Was that how far across the sheet was when you observed Paul's body?
I don't remember. Like I said, when I got there, there was SLED agents as well as deputies standing around the scene, and I wasn't sure what had happened before I got there. I don't recall how the sheet was.
Well, was the sheet on Paul's body the entire time you were walking the crime scene?
No, eventually it was removed when the crime scene unit was ready to process his body.
And I just want to clear up. When you said Alec was wearing khakis, were you referring to shorts or long pants?
Shorts.
Is this from the video we just, from the interview? Your Honor, we're going to publish a small portion of the video in the car, which is their last exhibit. Well, excuse me, that's from number one. Those are the shorts he was wearing?
Yes.
Are those khakis or green?
Khaki style, green.
Okay. All right. That's all. You can take it then. That's all the questions we have, Your Honor.
And redirect.
Yes, sir. Mr. Griffin asked you about some things you did after your interview the following days.
He did.
And you had mentioned a search warrant was executed. Were you working with SLED after June 8th? He's asked you about them. And did you work with them in executing search warrants?
I did.
Specifically on June 9th. And you were, who were you working with?
Special Agent Owen.
And I think Mr. Griffin asked you, there was a truck on the side of the road that went back to a brother, John Marvin?
That's correct.
So that was the white truck?
Yes.
That was on the side of the road?
Yes.
And it belonged, who did it belong to?
John Marvin.
Okay, and that was off the property of Michelle?
That's correct.
Okay. So that has nothing to do with this case as far as suspect and this killing does?
No, it did not. We processed to rule it out.
What's that last thing?
We process it to rule it out.
Okay. And he asked you about meeting with these folks and then talking to you. You were working with SLED doing that, weren't you?
I was.
SLED was investigating this case.
Yes.
Getting swabs from folks? In general, yeah. Getting swabs?
I was present when swabs were taken, yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to say yeah. You took them. I'm
no,
just following up on
his That's
question.
Correct, yeah.
Were you present when interviews were taken?
So I was present, yes.
Yeah. And who was leading those interviews?
SLED.
Who was in charge?
SLED.
Were they investigating?
They were investigating.
Did you assist SLED with the initial timeline on phone calls?
I did.
On June 12th, did you assist SLED in removing an internal computer black box of a Chevy Suburban?
I did, by standing by.
On June 14th, did you assist SLED in obtaining a search warrant for Maggie Murdaugh's Mercedes?
I did.
And was Lieutenant Kent in charge of that?
He was.
Was SLED investigating?
SLED was investigating.
Was that what's referred to as the blue box?
Black box, I
Black
believe.
Box. Okay.
Yes.
Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Were you with SLED when Maggie Murdaugh's Mercedes was towed?
I was.
Yeah. Did y'all have a search warrant for that?
We did.
I think he asked you, were you with SLED when ponds were searched in the area?
I was.
That's June 16th, would you dispute that, 2021?
No, that's correct.
And I think Mr. Griffin asked you about a truck that a Mr. Davis was driving out of the shed. Were you able to confirm that the tire tracks in the shed were his?
I did, by looking at them.
By looking at them?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I think Mr. Griffin asked you, did Mr. Davis say he was in and out of there a couple times a day?
Twice a day, yes.
So those tracks inside the shelter were whose?
The dog caretaker, Mr. Davis.
And I think he asked you about water. Just remind me, the night you were there, did you see water around the bodies?
I did.
Okay. He asked you about some injuries, I think, that you had noted in your report. How did Paul fall?
Face down at an angle outside the feed room.
On what?
On his hands and arms.
Okay. But his face hit what?
The gravel.
Mr. Griffin asked you about how many times the defendant, Richard Alexander Murdaugh, had mentioned to turn his son Paul's body on page 2 of the transcript or towards the front. Actually, I think I tried to turn Paul over first. You remember him saying that?
Yes.
You know, I tried to turn him over, and I don't know, I figured it out.
Yes.
And his cell phone popped out.
Correct.
And I tried to do something.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking maybe, but then I put it back down.
Correct.
Were his words, I think I tried to turn him over.
Yes.
And later on, I tried to turn him and then I tried to check him.
Correct.
I tried to turn him.
Correct.
He asked you about the sheet on the body. Did you see the front or the top of Paul's head?
I did.
Okay. And he asked you about the sheet over that body. I want to ask you about a sheet. When you saw Richard Alexander Murdaugh, did he have a sheet over him?
He did not.
Could you see his face, his hands, his body, his pants, and his shirt?
I could.
Did he look like somebody who just changed his clothes?
Yes.
Objection, Your Honor.
basis for the objection?
No basis for the opinion.
Response, Mr. Meadows.
I couldn't hear what he said.
No basis for the opinion.
Did those clothes appear to be fresh?
They did.
Like they just come out of the laundry?
They could be.
No objection, Your Honor.
There's no rule.
That's all we have.
Further questions?
Briefly, Your Honor, Detective, it was raining that night, wasn't it?
It started to rain before we did our interview.
Can you put up that photo that of his shorts and shirt that we saw a minute ago?
What's that? Waiting for him. No signal. Oh, here it is. Thanks.
So these are the clothes that you saw him wearing sitting in the car?
Correct.
And it's your testimony, those clothes look like they're freshly washed?
He's sweating and they are dry, so I would say yes.
Okay. Thank you.
You messed up now. I call your next witness.
Delilah Sarwitzion.
Thank you. Take a seat in the witness stand. State your name again for the record.
Spell your last name.
Miss Delilah Cirencion, Cirencione.
Good afternoon, Agent Cirencion.
Good afternoon.
Could you tell the jurors where you work?
I work for the South Carolina Law Enforcement Division, or SLED. I'm currently in the Behavioral Science Unit, but was formerly in the Crime Scene Unit.
Now, did you tell me that the mic cannot be turned up more and it cannot be moved? It's fixed.
Is that better, sir?
Yes.
Okay.
Let me see.
Thank you, Your Honor. What time or what dates were you working in the SLED crime scene unit?
I was with SLED crime scene from 2017 until 2022 in October.
So on June 7th of 2021, you were working with SLED crime scene?
Yes, ma'am, I was.
And did you have an occasion to be involved in the investigation of Alec Murdaugh?
I did.
And what was your involvement in that investigation?
On June 8th, I was requested by my lieutenant, Todd Shank, to respond to the call to medical center to collect buccal swabs or DNA swabs from two victims.
Okay. And can you tell the jurors what is a buccal swab?
A buccal swab is just a DNA swab, so it's a sterile Q-tip about this size, kind of like a Q-tip you use for your ear, and you swab the inside of the victim's cheeks for a DNA standard.
Do you just take one swab?
It comes in a set of two swabs within one container, so two swabs for each victim.
So you rub the inside of the person's cheek with that swab?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, and then what do you do with the swabs?
Then it's placed back inside the sterile container, and it's put into a coin envelope where it's sealed, dated, initialed, and the time of the collection is written on the envelope.
And it is sealed and dated and initialed to ensure that it is not tampered with. Would that be correct?
That is correct.
And if someone else analyzes or manipulates that swab, they should note that on the packaging?
I'm not sure how it goes after it's out of my control, but I chained all that over to Lieutenant Todd Shank once I went back to the SLED Forensic Laboratory.
So where did you turn those buccal swabs in?
After I left the medical center, I went back to SLED to the Forensic Laboratory and did a chain of custody with my lieutenant, and it was then in his custody.
And going back, just to be clear, who did you collect buccal swabs from?
One female victim, Margaret, and one male victim, Paul Murdaugh.
That's where this segment stops rather abruptly. There seemed to be some confusion in the courtroom as the counsel was looking for something in a large Tupperware-type container going through documents, and it seemed to pause the proceedings for a short period of time. It then did pick up again shortly thereafter, and that's where we will pick things up in segment number three. That is our next segment to come here on the feed. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you download podcasts as to not miss any of our continuing coverage and discussions on the Alec Murdaugh case here from True Crime Today. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.